We are women recently released from Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, where we were in a program called the Family Preservation Project, which helped our children stay connected to us and taught us how to parent.
The Department of Corrections chose to cancel the Family Preservation Project. Tune in to Prison Pipeline to hear how you can help us flip the switch on DOC's decision. Please support Senate Bill 939, which addresses the needs of children with incarcerated moms.
That's Prison Pipeline, June 22nd at 6:30 p.m.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. This is Voices for the Animals, a public affairs program that examines issues affecting the lives of animals in the Portland area and beyond. Stay tuned for the debut of this program, focusing today on convicting animal cruelty in Oregon.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying her habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Animals. My name is Dab Stedman, and I'll be your host today. This is the premier segment in a series of programs which will air monthly on this station. My co-hosts and I will bring you up to speed on matters of importance in the animal world. Whether you're an activist or not, I invite you to listen to this innovative program. Our guest today is Jacob Kamens, the only district attorney in all the nation whose sole responsibility is to prosecute crimes against animals. In the past, many animal abusers here managed to escape prosecution, but things are different now that Jake Kamens is on the scene because he's taking a big bite out of animal crime in Oregon. Mr. Kamens, welcome to Voices for the Animals.
Good afternoon.
You have a big job with a big title to match. You are the Deputy District Attorney for Animal Abuse for the State of Oregon.
Yeah, my title on my business card is Animal Cruelty Deputy District Attorney, but my position extends throughout the 36 counties in the state of Oregon.
Great. Let's start by hearing a little bit about your background and how you came to be appointed to this groundbreaking position.
Sure. When I graduated from Lewis and Clark Law School in 2009, I started working at the Multnomah County District Attorneys Association here in Portland. There at the DA's office, you start in what's called the misdemeanor row, where you're just handling misdemeanor trials. And you handle everything from low-level disorderly conducts all the way up to some animal cruelty charges, DUIIs, assaults. And the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office takes very seriously animal cruelty charges and always has. And as a result, when those charges come in, even when you're handling them on a misdemeanor level, you always make sure to pay really special close attention to those cases because they can be complicated and they're very important cases both to the victims and the community.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Was there a specific incident at some point in your life that prompted you to become an animal defender?
I handled a couple of cases that were very complex animal cruelty cases at Multnomah County. And those came to me just sort of by random chance. I didn't seek them out. I didn't take, you know, animal law classes in law school. I didn't seek out to do this kind of work. But the cases fell to me, and I got a taste for them. I really enjoy going through this process, especially with these cases where the victims have no voice other than law enforcement and the criminal justice system. So I had a couple of cases that I worked with the Oregon Humane Society, Multnomah County Animal Control, Most importantly, the Animal Legal Defense Fund, which is a longstanding organization that has its investigations unit headquartered here in Portland. And what they do is they go to prosecutors countrywide and help them with animal cruelty cases, because there are a lot of nuances to the cases, and it's can be a complex area of law. So there were a couple cases that I had where I worked with the Animal Legal Defense Fund. And as a result of my work on those cases, I ended up being named one of the, I think it was top 10 animal defenders for 2010, I believe, to maybe 2011. You know, when this position came open, I really thought long and hard about it, because it was important cases and it was something that I'd really enjoyed working on, and wanted to continue working in that vein to, you know, defend and protect animal victims.
Well, that sounds very good. But tell us, if cases were already being adjudicated, animal abuse cases, why was this special permission position for an animal abuse prosecutor funded in the first place?
Sure. So there are a lot of prosecutors' offices that do have you know, a person who specially handles animal cruelty cases. That was true before I started. That's true since I've started. But those people always inevitably have another full caseload on top of their animal cruelty caseload. In counties that don't have as much funding, say, as the counties here in the metro area, Washington, Clackamas, Multnomah, there may not be somebody who's specially appointed to those cases. Excuse me. So it's really a question of resources. And when it comes to counties that don't have as many resources, these cases with animal victims may end up falling a little bit through the cracks or getting a little bit less attention, because people are focusing, obviously, on cases with human victims. You know, and human victims have a lot more, ability to go into the system and raise their claims and push their cases. So,
and the counties with fewer resources might, in fact, have more cases of animal abuse in the rural areas, let's say?
It's possible. Yeah, it's certainly possible. I haven't, I don't know the numbers on that, but it's definitely a problem that I've seen throughout the state as I've gone south down all the way to the southernmost counties. I've gone out eastern Oregon. I've been on the coast, you know, and I've seen animal cruelty in every county.
So the complaints are coming from all over the state then?
Yeah, yeah. And so what was great was the Animal Legal Defense Fund had this idea and partnered with the Oregon District Attorneys Association to create this position and fund this position and make this position available for all the 36 district attorneys in the state of Oregon free of charge.
Now, so, do you work side by side with them or as a consultant, or do they have any input into how you do your job?
Yes. So the only people that have input into the way that I work on my cases are the district attorneys under whom I am appointed. So if I'm appointed on a case, for example, in Benton County, John Haroldson, the elected district attorney there, he's my supervisor. He's the one who can say, here's what, you know, we can do with this case ultimately. If I'm appointed on a case in Polk County, Aaron Felton is my supervisor. And those are the only people, the elected DAs, who I take any kind of supervision
from,
or direction from.
Okay.
And ODAA has been very supportive, and I have worked as a sworn deputy district attorney in almost half of Oregon's 36 counties since I started.
And when did you start?
September 2013.
Okay.
So about a year and a half. And I've already worked in almost half of Oregon's 36 counties. So
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big job.
It
as
is.
I said. Yeah. Well, gosh, animal abuse. The mere thought of it is chilling, and I know when we hear about it, we know what it is. But exactly what legally constitutes a crime against animals here? And is there a difference between animal abuse and animal neglect in the eyes of the law?
Yeah. So what I sort of, to broad strokes, paint a picture of it, I typically break down the charges that I deal with into two categories, abuse and neglect. And those are both under the sort of umbrella term of animal cruelty. There are some charges, assorted charges, that don't fall under that. And nobody should take this to be like the last word on, you know, legal advice for any of these things. But generally speaking, you're talking about abuse, which is somebody either intentionally, consciously, or knowingly, or even recklessly hurting an animal, causing a physical injury or a serious physical injury,
like,
or death.
Like the fellow who shot his cat with a bow and arrow, for instance.
You know, and I don't tend to talk about specific cases, okay, but hypothetically speaking, somebody shooting an animal with a bow and arrow, yes, could fall under that. And then you have the category of neglect. The key to neglect is the failure to provide an animal whom you have control over with minimum care. And the law has specific definitions of minimum care. It's food enough for an animal to maintain proper body weight, drinkable water, proper veterinary care, euthanasia if appropriate. And it goes down this whole list of things. And there are additionally things that don't fall specifically in the statute that you can talk about. For instance, I've had several cases where hoof care for horses has been a real issue. And technically, if you ask a horse person, hoof care doesn't really fall under this veterinary umbrella because, you know, you don't have to have a vet to care for your horse's hoofs necessarily.
It's not a medical condition.
It's not a medical issue, but it is a quality of life issue. It is a potentially very sensitive issue for horses because they're putting, you know, 1,400, 1,700 pounds of pressure on their hooves, and that's all they got between their large bodies and the, you know, potentially hard ground. So hoof care becomes very important. That's to say that neglect can be a lot of things, but the touchstone is, did you provide minimum care for an animal in your custody or control?
Well, I think you painted a pretty good picture there. Can you describe for us your responsibilities as Oregon's designated animal abuse prosecutor?
Sure. I have sort of three things that I would say that I do on a day-to-day basis. The bulk of my work is my casework. So I'm sworn as a deputy district attorney in any number of counties. I am either working with law enforcement to investigate a case, potentially helping write warrant affidavits, you know, giving advice on how to proceed in an investigation to make sure that we have the case built, or the case has been sent to the DA's office. I'm making a decision as to whether to go forward, what charges to press on this case, potentially presenting it to a grand jury if it's a felony issue. And then once the case is issued, I'm, negotiating the case, providing discovery to the defense attorneys, going back and forth, figuring out how much restitution is owed, doing all that work. And then if all efforts to resolve it with a plea bargain fail, then I'm the guy taking the case to trial. And assuming we get a guilty verdict at trial, I'm the one making the pitch at sentencing, you know, potentially handling, it's in my purview to potentially handle or help with appellate issues. I haven't had to do that yet, but it's something that I could work on. So that's part one, is the prosecution, you know, actually working on cases. Part two is a lot of people that are involved in the investigation and even prosecution of animal cruelty don't know a whole lot about it, because these cases are certainly rarer than, say, a DUII or a theft. So, you know, your average patrol officer may not know how to investigate best an animal cruelty complaint. Your average deputy district attorney may not know the best questions to ask during jury selection. So a big part of my job is education. I've spoken to conferences held by the Oregon Humane Society, the Oregon Animal Control Conference. I'm not sure what their organization is called, but it's an organization of animal mm-hmm. control officers. I've spoken to DA groups. I've spoken to law student groups. I've spoken to, just people involved in animal cruelty investigation and prosecution.
So the 40-hour work week does not apply here.
Right, yeah. right. Okay. The last portion is things like this, media, raising media profile on the issues of animal cruelty, because it's important that people sort of understand what is happening in this world, what they can do, and what we're doing in the DA's offices.
Exactly. Thank you. In a relatively short time on the job, you have already been able to prosecute a number of animal abuse cases. Can you tell us, though, about the animals themselves that are victims of these crimes? Are certain types of animals more likely to be victims of abuse, and what kinds of complaints do you generally receive?
I have to start with the caveat that because of the, funding issues that we talked about, I'm typically not brought in to do cases in Multnomah County, Washington County, Clackamas County. And obviously, if you were to look at a population map of Oregon, the population is pretty much weighted in that area. But there's a huge, rest of the state. But it's mostly rural. So what I've been seeing on my job is largely neglect-based cases, cases of animal neglect, and mostly with animals that fall under the livestock/equine mm-hmm. designation.
Cows and horses.
Cows,
and
horses,
goats,
alpacas.
Alpacas, yes.
Goats, yeah. I don't typically talk about specifics about any of my cases, certainly not about any pending cases, but that's been the sort of general population, or the general victim that I've had has been, a horse or a cow or a goat.
And just one sort of different type of question. Our listeners might be interested to know whether there is a generally recognized animal abuser profile, and if so, what should we all be looking for?
I'm not sure that there is. From what I've seen, and I can only talk about sort of the things that I've seen, because I don't do a whole lot of work outside of the parameters of my job. Animal abuse and animal neglect doesn't necessarily fit a profile. Rich, poor, any particular, background. This happens in all communities, I think, and it's something that all communities have to sort of face up against and recognize when it happens.
Be on the lookout for. We'll return to our discussion with Jacob Kamens about convicting animal abusers after a short break. Welcome back. This is Voices for the Animals on your community radio, KBOO Portland. I'm Dab Stedman, talking today with Jacob Kamens, who is the Deputy District Attorney for Animal Abuse for the State of Oregon. Mr. Kamens, would you agree that law enforcement officials are taking crimes against animals more seriously now, mainly because animal abuse is sometimes seen as a precursor to violence against humans?
I know that in the state of Oregon, certainly in the counties that I've worked, in the counties that I've helped with animal cruelty cases, that law enforcement and district attorneys take these cases extremely seriously. There is a definite understanding of the link, and it's sort of known as the link in animal welfare circles, between violence against animals and violence against humans. And what I've seen, people definitely take that seriously. Oregon is a great example of a state where the legislature has done a great job, and law enforcement officers and officials have fulfilled the legislature's promise to protect animal victims.
Okay. If an animal is in imminent danger of losing its life through either abuse or neglect, what kind of action is taken under these circumstances?
It depends. You know, animals occupy an interesting position in our law in that they can be victims of crime, certainly, but they're also seen as people's property in a lot of circumstances. And certainly when an animal is on somebody's private property, law enforcement is somewhat constrained because obviously to get on a person's private property, you either need a warrant or an exception to the warrant requirement. You need to have something that lets you get on the property without having a warrant. In Oregon recently, there's been a series of court decisions that said essentially, if a law, and I'm sort of boiling this really way down, it's a little bit more complex than this, but essentially, if a trained officer can identify that an animal is in risk of imminent death, that they can enter even private property without permission of the owner to administer emergency aid. And then similarly, that if an animal is, if the evidence of the animal being neglected is in danger of dissipating, you know, you can get test results from a live animal that you can't get from a dead animal, and the officer has probable cause to believe that the crime of animal neglect has been committed, they can also enter without a warrant.
So those are two real advancements in animal protection in this state.
They, yes, the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court separately took up the issue in the same case, but they took up the issue and decided on those two separate bases.
Okay, yeah. But since undertaking your job, have you ever run into a situation that was either too big or too difficult to handle in time to save the lives of the animals who were in jeopardy?
No. We do as best we can in law enforcement to save animals. I mean, that's sort of a major priority. But other major priorities include, obeying the law and getting a warrant if a warrant is necessary, and making sure that before we take the step of seizing somebody's property or even investigating by going on to somebody's property, that we know what's going on. So there have been situations where, unfortunately, you know, in building the case, animals have died. But it's in the service of making sure that we are absolutely sure before we use the power of the state
doing it right
go in and take animals and potentially charge somebody with a crime.
Well, how do most people react when charges are brought against them for violating animal protection laws? And have you ever been personally threatened in any way by an accused abuser?
I've never been threatened. Good. No, I've been a DA since 2009, and I've never been threatened in my job, so I'm thankful for that. People are run the gamut a little bit, as you can imagine. There are some people who are accused of having neglected their animals who almost appear to be relieved. They knew they didn't have the funds or the wherewithal to care for their animals, and they didn't do what they needed to do, but it just got to the point where they were just overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
And so there are some people that are that. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there are people who are indignant. Yeah. Indignant. Just, there's no way. I would never mistreat my animal. I love my animals.
They're in denial.
Yeah. There's some of that. It really runs the whole spectrum.
Well, getting back to your work in the courtroom, if you successfully try an animal abuse case in court, what are the legal consequences to the convicted abusers likely to be?
So for every animal cruelty conviction, the law states that upon entry of conviction, a person is no longer allowed in the state of Oregon to possess domestic animals or animals of the same genus that they have been convicted of neglecting or abusing, 5 years. And that's without the judge imposing sentence or doing anything. That kicks into play. That's automatic. It's automatic. Okay. It's against the law. It's a misdemeanor for them to possess those animals for 5 years, and for the more serious crimes for 15 years. At sentencing, judges largely have discretion in Oregon. We have in misdemeanor cases an upper limit that we can get to, depending on what class of misdemeanor it is. It could be 6 months in jail. It could be a year in jail. What you usually see on those cases is people get placed on probation, the jail sentence gets suspended, you know, and they get all these conditions: pay back the restitution that you owe, don't possess any animals, do community service, these kinds of things. And if you do all those things, if you toe the line, then you will get through your probation without triggering the jail hammer.
Okay.
Felonies are a little different.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any indication that convicted abusers are apt to change their evil ways or not? And if not, what might dissuade these repeat offenders? I know you just said they're not supposed to have animals, but do they always follow those guidelines or mandates?
Not always. Mm-hmm. There are certainly people that get it in their head that, you know, they're entitled to possess animals. And certainly we see a little bit of that even on the people that are coming in for their first case. But, I would tend to leave the answer to that question to people that do more in terms of studying animal or criminality. Mm-hmm. I prosecute the cases. I don't tend to spend a lot of time, you know, thinking philosophically about the aims of sentencing and punishments.
Okay. One very practical question for the benefit of our listeners. If someone witnesses an instance of animal abuse or serious neglect, what should he or she do? Do we call? Do we take photos? Do we make notes? What should we do?
There is in every county animal control, and they tend to be a good first line of defense. If you're in a county that's a bigger county like Multnomah County or Washington County, you can certainly call the police. The Animal Legal Defense Fund actually put together an app for your phone. So if you just Google ALDF app, I think it's called Live Safe, where you can it sort of helps you through the process of documenting what you're seeing, and certainly that's a great idea, and contacting the proper law enforcement authority. So
okay, yeah. Well, I'm reluctant to ask this next question, but as your position as the DA for animal abuse has been funded for only 3 years, what will happen to the prosecution of animal crimes in Oregon after that?
I don't really want to speculate what's going to happen after 3 years. So I've been doing this for a year and a half, and my contract is renewed on an annual basis. So I actually have contract renewal coming up in September. I expect to keep doing it for the remainder of the 3 years. I already have trials scheduled into October. So
you're doing a great job. So there's no reason why you wouldn't be kept on.
I would. And so after 3 years, I'm not sure. That's more of a question for, the people in charge.
Okay.
I do know that ODAA and the district attorneys in the state of Oregon will make sure that animal cruelty is prosecuted no matter what.
Okay. And then is there anything that KBOO listeners can do to support the continuation of this important work?
Like
contacting our officials or?
Yeah, well, I'm happy for that. I just want people to stay vigilant and keep their eyes out. And you can always tweet me. I'm on Twitter at at Animal DDA. You know, if you are inclined to contact your local prosecuting attorney and support the position, that would be fantastic. But I really am doing it because it's work that I believe in, and it's a great program.
Well, I'm very sorry to say that our time is up now, so I want to thank you so very much, Jacob Kamens, for sharing your expertise with us today. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in today to Voices for the Animals. Please check the station website at kboo.fm to hear a podcast of this program or for some information about our next program airing in July. Until then, remember that you too can be a voice for the animals. This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The music heard on today's program is by Gaia and performed by Martin Wilkinson on cello and Charita on the cajon.
Time for the KBOO News at noon for Monday, June 22, 2015. In western Washington state, a ban on fires has been extended for a second week. The statewide burn ban applies to state forests and state parks. It does not include federally owned land such as national forests, national parks, national wildlife refuges, or other areas administered by federal agencies. In 2015 so far, there have been 306 wildfire starts throughout the state. In Oregon, the wildfire season has also begun, with a drought reaching severe levels in most parts of the state. State officials are concerned about the extremely dry conditions that set the stage for wildfires. A 175-acre blaze was found this weekend south of the Sucker Creek State Natural Area in eastern Oregon. The cause of the wildfire has yet to be determined, and there's no estimate for when it might be contained. Elsewhere, crews in southwest Oregon used a controlled burning operation.